Hello and welcome to A Voice of a People. This is our second hour. My name is Linda Sims here on WGH Talk. Welcome to the show. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. Again, this is The Voice of a People. My name is Linda Sims. Okay, you can also download a free app on any electronic device. The app is titled Tune In. Once you download that app, please go to the search bar and type in WWGH. Or you can call this number, 740-383-9944, to be a part of the show, ask questions. Or maybe you would like to be a guest on my show. You're welcome to call that number, 740-383-9944. Let me share with you some people who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, of 1325 North Main Street here in Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have an ongoing announcement. Free produce will begin April the 20th of 2024. When it starts, the hours are 12 noon until 2 p.m. They also have a wellness fitness campus area adjacent to the sanctuary, open to the public. They do ask that you respect their property. We also have Cheryl Lee. She is the coordinator for Child Evangelism Fellowship, known as the Good News Club, which is a faith-based after-school program located in all Marion City and County Elementary Schools, along with North Union's County Elementary Schools. Cheryl Lee can be contacted at 740-262-0939. They will be also hosting a silent auction taking place Saturday at Cornerstone Alliance Church, Route 4 South, from the hours of 11 a.m. until 2 p.m., and doors open at 10:30. For those of you who would like to go in and browse and see what they have for the auction, it requires a $10 donation for lunch. I'd like to start my show with a thought for today. I just want to salute those people who faithfully support A Voice of a People, and those of you who listen regularly, thank you for your love and your support. Today's thought, a point of view. When someone disbelieves us, we usually argue back and try to prove our point. Yet we find that the more we talk, the less people listen. Unable to convince them, we end up frustrated. Instead, when someone challenges my words, I should think about whether they might be right. Rather than stubbornly clinging to my point of view, I could embrace this as an opportunity to learn. Even if I am correct in my thinking, if I become able to understand someone else's point of view without getting angry or refusing to listen, I become tolerant. And I think that it's an excellent word for today, because I know a lot of us struggle with that. Sometimes I do too when I'm talking to my grandsons, the younger generation, you know, and I get frustrated. But you're right, we should listen to their point of view. They may have some truth in it as well. So thank you for that. And I will turn my attention to my guest today, Fred Malone, who is the chairman of the Marion Historical Society. It's been a couple months since I've seen you.
It has been. Yes, it has been. Yeah. How have you been?
I've been good.
Good.
Well,
good to see
you. Well, thank you. And it's so good to see you.
Well, you know, with your former guests we just talked about, we're all getting older, but, you know, we're still above ground, and it beats the alternative. So we'll take whatever comes our way until it's our time to meet our maker.
Amen.
But, I've missed being on, and maybe we can try to get a couple of times next month, kind of make up for some last time.
Yeah,
but
that'd be nice.
Got a lot to talk about. Sorry I couldn't be here for the first hour, but we have an awful lot going on up at Heritage Hall right now. We are, of course, closed. for the season. Mm-hmm. The office personnel is still there, so I do like to throw that out. If you're interested in finding out anything or needing anything like that, you can call the office at 740-387-4255 or stop up during the Monday through Friday and just ring the bell on the State Street at the State Street side door, and the office staff can let you in and talk to you if you need any information. We are right in the process of putting a new roof on the building.
Okay.
This is part of the capital campaign that we started almost 3 years ago to try to raise about $950,000.
A lot of money.
Just short of $1 million. Yeah. To do a new roof. To do a new HVAC system, heating and cooling system in the building, and to tuck point the outside of the building and do some work on the inside. So altogether, about $1 million. We are about close to 70% of our goal, so we're still short about $275,000 that we're continuing to seek funds for. However, we did raise enough money to get the roof done and the HVAC system, so both of those are in progress right now. So if you see a lot of trucks and cranes and things like that at the museum site, which is the old post office building in Marion, you'll know what's going on. We currently have some of our area parking area closed off because of the cranes and the type of work that they're doing. But again, we will reopen the museum for a special event in March, which I'm going to talk about this morning.
Okay.
But first of all, I want to talk about an event that we're going to be co-sponsoring with on March the 13th at 7 o'clock in the evening. And we're all aware of what's happening here in April, the big eclipse.
Oh, yes.
That's coming, yes. I believe it's April the 8th. April the 8th. And, of course, I was told that all of the available hotel, motel rooms in Marion have been sold out for over a year.
Oh, my.
And the county commissioners and the proper authorities, sheriff's department and so forth, are advising local people to make sure that you have your cars filled up with gas.
Yes.
The few days before, the week before even, I would suggest.
Oh, my God.
Make sure you have substantial amounts of food in your house to get you through several days, because I think they're anticipating about 100,000 people arriving in this area on
that
day.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Because this eclipse is going to be happening right above our heads. Right above our heads. So this event that we're going to be co-sponsoring or putting on with the Marion Public Library and the Marion County Historical Society will occur on March the 13th at 7 o'clock. The program will be held at Tri Rivers Auditorium, which is located over on Marion Mount Gilead Road. And if you go that night, you'll want to go in where the auditorium entrance is. There's a canopy that hangs over that. But it's being called Darkness at Midday Over the Ohio Country, not since Tecumseh. Now, we all knew who Tecumseh was.
Right.
The last time Ohio was witness to a total eclipse of the sun was June the 16th of 1806. Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
The 1806 eclipse has gone down in history as Tecumseh's eclipse. Now, this event is being funded by the Marion Community Foundation and the Ohio Humanities, and in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. As a result, this is a free event.
Right.
So there will be no charge at the door. And when you arrive, you will be given a pair of eclipse sunglasses.
Okay.
As long as supplies last. Now, we have no idea how many people we'll get. We usually set up chairs for a couple of hundred when we do this at Tri Rivers Auditorium. And I think we could probably get maybe 250 chairs set up this year. So we won't turn anybody away.
Right.
But if capacity is more than what seating is, there may be some standing room there, you may or may not get a set of glasses.
Right.
Now, I do know that the library is giving out glasses at the library, I think starting tomorrow, first of the month, one pair to a person, and you can't go in and request four or five pairs. So if you need a pair of glasses and your wife needs a pair of glasses or your children need them, they all have to go into the library to get them. But they're also going to be provided at this event and also a couple other events that the library is doing over before the March 13th date. Before the eclipse. So kind of remember that if you don't happen to get glasses this particular event on the 13th, you can still pick them up at other locations. And we need to remind people, too, that you have to have special eclipse glasses. Just a pair of sunglasses won't work.
Right.
And we're advising people to be careful ordering on the internet because you know how people are. There
scams,
are bound to be
yes.
some people out there with scams that want to just sell you something that's not legit.
True.
So you
not
have
true.
To be careful because you can damage your eyes, including blindness. If you stare at this eclipse without the proper protection.
Right.
So anyway, our featured speaker that night will be Thomas O'Grady, and he is an astronomy instructor at Ohio University since 1984. He'll share the dynamics causing solar eclipses, subsequent eclipse expeditions, some history linked to the eclipse of 1806, and a few stories about war and peace that have been associated with this unique celestial phenomenon. So, in fact, the Indians, or the prehistoric peoples, were definitely very confused when this happened.
I'm sure.
Obviously, it hadn't happened in most of their lifetimes at that point.
Right.
And Tecumseh was advised of this situation by his brother, Tenskwatawa, who was referred to as the prophet.
Oh.
So they attribute this to Tecumseh, but Tenskwatawa was actually the one that foresaw this eclipse coming.
Mm-hmm.
And in his position as a prophet, he would advise local tribes throughout the Ohio Valley about other things, not just this eclipse that happened.
Right.
So it should be a very interesting event. Again, it's called the Darkness at Midday over the Ohio Country, not since Tecumseh. Again, it's a free event put on by the Marion Public Library and the Marion County Historical Society to be held March the 13th at 7 o'clock. And it will be held at Tri Rivers Auditorium just off of Marion Mount Gilead Road. And I would certainly advise you to get there early.
Right.
I know for a lot of the programs that we have, people start coming at 6 o'clock. So that's not out of the question, especially something like this. I think people are going to be very interested. And there's been so much hype going on about this whole thing. And the fact that it hasn't happened in Ohio since 1806 is a marvel to me.
So I know.
You're talking over 200 years. Yeah, over 200 years. So should be very interesting. And I am going to leave this
with you
so that you can kind of push that the next couple of weeks because it's coming up here just in 13 days.
Yes, it is.
So, and again, happy February the 29th. Leap day.
I know.
Leap year day. I saw before I started my running around this morning, I was watching Today Show, and they were interviewing people on an ocean liner. They do this every 4 years. It's a group of people that celebrate February the 29th as their birthday.
Okay. Yeah.
And so all these people come together. I think there are 300 and some people on board the ship, and they all had the birthday of February the 29th. And so they were interviewing some of the people, and they said, well, how old are you? I'm 14 years old, but I'm really 56, you know, whatever
right,
the case
right.
might be, you know,
right,
which is
yeah.
kind of funny to think about that. So I thought that was interesting. It's almost kind of like when they have that big event up at Twinsburg every year when they have twins from all over the country arrive in Twinsburg and bring all their twins with them. So. Anyway, mark that on your calendar, the 13th of March, and plan on being in attendance. I think it's going to be a fascinating experience for us all. And again, and we'll talk about this as I come back. I know you'll probably mention it too. But just remember, 100,000 people may be arriving in Marion around that time. So make sure your gas tank's filled up and you got groceries in the house.
Okay, will do.
You never know what's going to happen.
That's so true.
So the other big event that I want to talk about for the Marion County Historical Society, which is an annual event, and I was trying to think today how many years we've been doing this, and I was kind of basing it on the first year that I did it, and I've been doing it, I think this is going to be my 22nd year of having done it. And I know they were doing it a few years before I joined the Historical Society. So I'm going to say it's probably about the 25th year that we've been doing this. And it kind of coincided with the movie Night at the Museum, if your listeners would happen to have seen that movie. And I think that movie came out about that many years ago. But that was a movie where the night watchman at the museum was astounded when all the characters in the museum started coming alive.
Right.
Well, Night at Heritage Hall is our version of Night at the Museum, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you were there last year, you and your husband. And so you will arrive at the museum and you'll enter through the auditorium door, which is the lower level of the museum, right off of our parking lot. And by the way, there is plenty of parking available. Our lot and the lot right across State Street behind the church is also going to be open this year. So that's available for overflow parking. So there's plenty of parking.
That's good.
But you will arrive at that destination. You will come in through the museum doors, the auditorium doors, upon which you will receive a flashlight. Mm-hmm. The rest of the museum will be darkened, both the basement floor or the lower floor and the upper floor. And there will be roughly 35, 40, 50. We're still adding characters as we go along. There from Marion history, Ohio history, and U.S. history. And they will be engaging you in conversation, telling you who they are.
Right.
You can ask them questions about who they are. And you'll also get an opportunity to see the new exhibit, mm-hmm. which is currently being redone on the atrium area of the museum, which is on the top floor.
Right.
And I always ask people, have you been to the museum? Oh, yes, I was there last year. But have you been lately? Because every year we change that exhibit out.
Right.
And there'll be a new exhibit there this year. So okay. I'm pretty excited about that, and I can't tell you what it is yet.
Right.
But they're working on it right now. In fact, I just came from the museum, and it looks like a tornado went through there because there's all the other stuff is out that was on exhibit or out on the floor, and they're bringing new things up from archives. So it's pretty cool.
Good.
But again, March the 23rd, hours are 6 to 9. Mm-hmm. Tickets will be available at the door. We used to do pre-sale, but that got to be too much of a pain, so everything is just buy it at the door. I don't have the price available, but it's relatively inexpensive. If you are a member of the museum, the Historical Society, you do get a dollar or two break. Mm-hmm. But it's under $10, let's put it that way. Some of the characters this year, I brought a list of what we have available so far, and we're still adding characters every day. Dr. Benjamin Osborne. And now, that name may not be too familiar to a lot of people, but Dr. Benjamin Osborne was a doctor in Waldo for years and years and years.
Okay.
And if you are a visitor occasionally to the Bologna restaurant on the corner.
Yes, 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 yes.
His office was directly behind that building. There's a little white building that sits on the corner of the alley,
okay,
and it's right behind. It's right behind where they sell the bologna sandwiches, and that's where his office was. So he was a practicing physician there for years and years, and was still practicing into the 20s and 30s. So Dr. Benjamin Osborne will be there. Clinton Lower, who was a pharmacist here in Marion for a number of years, and some of the older folks may remember that name, but he was kind of an interesting character. He had a big mansion out off of 309. For local people, if you know where Sally Ann's was, mm-hmm. out on 309, if you turn on to Route 37 to the right, if you were going west, his place was just down the road a little piece. There was two great big stone gates out front. You drove back this long driveway, and he had a big mansion back there.
Wow.
And he was known to entertain questionable individuals that came from places like Chicago and New York, the gangster type. And he would actually send a black limousine, which people would see coming through Marion, up to the train station, Union Station, usually early on a Friday morning, to pick up a load of gentlemen coming in from Chicago or New York or other places to spend the weekend at his estate. Later in the day, another vehicle would be sent up to pick up the ladies of the evening that would be spending the weekend at this estate with those gentlemen. So he was kind of a questionable individual.
Right.
But has an interesting story to tell. Dr. Maud Bull, who was a doctor here back in the early days, who was purported to have delivered over 9,000 babies in Marion County. Yes, she'll be there. Simon Pierce. Simon was the first black barber in Marion County. He will be there in his shop, and we'll cut your hair for you if you want. We're going to have someone there demonstrating vintage toys from the 1800s. The wood carvers will be there. They usually rent our space in our auditorium every Monday night where they gather and do their wood carving. So they'll be demonstrating wood carving.
Right.
We'll have an 1800 school marm there to talk about what it was like going to school back in the early days. We're going to have a 1920s nurse who will be there, and she will probably be assisting Dr. Osborne, who will be there at his little station. I have a railroad hobo that will be there. And, of course, in the 1920s and 1930s, during the Depression area, hobos were very prevalent, especially in the Marion area because, you know, we had a lot of rail activity going on here.
Yeah,
it was a real train hub here. And, of course, hobos rode the rails. That's the way they got around.
Right.
And they would usually set up outside of communities their little encampment. They were called hobo jungles. They would share whatever they had to eat with one another. Hobos also were very interesting because traveling the rails and going through a lot of cities and villages, they usually knew where the houses were that they could go to get something to eat or a handout. And they had their own code. And I thought this was very interesting. I read a book years ago about hobo and train travel. They had their own code that they could mark like on a tree in front of a house, a certain symbol, and they had several symbols for different things. If this was a good house or a bad house, you know, one you didn't want to go to because you might get run off by a shotgun, you know. So I thought that was very interesting that they had their own symbols that they could use to designate where they should go and where they shouldn't go. But we'll have a hobo there talking about those things. Jacob Hauser will be there. Now, the Hauser family was the family that owned Prince Imperial. When you were at the museum last year, do you remember the big white horse?
Yes.
They got Prince Imperial from one of the members of Napoleon's family in France. Napoleon the third or fourth, I can't remember which number. But that horse was brought over here in the 1860s. The horse was born in 1865, and I think they purchased him in like 1867. And the Hauser's estate was out on County Road or State Route 95 east. So before you get to where River Valley School is, if you're going east, River Valley's on the left. On the right, there's a big long driveway that goes back to a huge brick house. That was the Hauser estate. And they would take this horse all over the country to fairs and things like that to exhibit it because at that time, this horse had the longest mane of any Percheron or draft horse in the country. In fact, they claimed in the world. So they would take the horse around for it to be seen by people. Of course, they charged an admission.
Of course.
10 cents, whatever. And when the horse died, the family could not bear could not bring themselves to bury the horse because they'd become attached to it. So they contacted P.T. Barnum, who at that time still had a large circus and an exhibit up in New York. And Jumbo the elephant had just passed away, and P.T. Barnum had Jumbo stuffed, had him preserved. So they contacted P.T. Barnum and said, "Who did the taxidermy work on Jumbo? We want to have our horse stuffed."
Right.
So they did. They brought it back to Marion, sent it up in a train car on dry ice, brought it back to Marion, and for years the horse sat inside the house. Just as you went in the front door, there's a big alcove area there, so they had it in the house. When the last Hauser moved off the property and we had a place, the horse was given to the Marion County Historical Society, and it's been there ever since. So that's one of the things we like to point out when you come to the museum.
Story.
Yeah, it's a fantastic story.
It is.
And he has his own permanent exhibit there, and they did a wonderful job.
Hello, caller. You are on the air.
Thank Hello, Linda.
Hi.
Why, I asked Fred if that hobo that comes to be at Marion here, is that alias Boxcar Willie?
No, but I actually saw Boxcar Willie a couple of times over the years when he performed up just outside of Sycamore.
Did you, Fred? Yeah. Well, I started my railroad career in 64, and they're still bailing off out west of Marion. The train would naturally slow down into yard limits there, and they'd bring the hot shot 98s and stuff in, which back in them time didn't have generators and kerosene coolers for the boxcar. They had to get them iced at the house there, and that's pretty interesting thing that I found out in my young life, watching them jam that ice and the salt down into the corners of the boxcar to refrigerate all the perishables and stuff going across the railroad. But yeah, you could see them coming in. We'd work in the yard engine at that particular time. Why, you could see them, it'd slow down, and probably train beam might be going 3 or 4 mile an hour into the yard limits and getting ready to spot at the ice house to get ice and stuff in there. And they would bail off there, and the detectives would, if they come up any further on the limits, they'd just tell them, say, hey, you're at the wrong spot. Turn around and head back where you come from.
Chase them off.
I just thought I'd put a little gig in. How you doing, Fred?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm doing great. Yeah, actually, as I said, I did see Boxcar Willie. He performed in a place just outside of McCutcheonville called the Hollow Inn, and he was quite a character.
Much McCutcheonville. Boy, that isn't too far. You could smell the new Regal ribs, couldn't you?
Just about. Well, thanks for calling in, Ted. Appreciate it.
Well, you laughed about that. Do you know what the new Regal ribs consist of?
Well, yeah. Tell us.
How's that?
Yes, go ahead. Tell us.
Well, I say, do you know what it consists of?
The new Regal ribs?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what the recipe was, no.
Well, did you eat up there at New Regal?
Oh, sure, yes, many times.
Did you stand in line any time?
Of course.
Yeah, many and many a line.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was pretty, put a little gig in there and get a little humor into the conversation there. You've been on for a long time there, but I just wanted to make sure you knew Boxcar Willie, okay?
Well, appreciate that, Ted. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
okay.
You.
Have a good one.
Call any time. Thank you.
Wow, yeah, New Regal ribs. I got a real quick story, and Ted will appreciate this. When I was president of the bank in Sycamore, the little bank that was in New Regal had come up for sale. Fifth Third owned that at that particular time. And I got with Fifth Third and ended up buying that branch from them and turned it into a branch of the First National Bank of Sycamore. Well, doing a little history on that bank, when it was the old New Regal State Bank way back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, they had a direct line at that time put in from the boardroom to the New Regal rib joint. Okay. And about halfway through the meeting, the board meeting that they were having for the bank, they would call over to the rib joint and have them bring over a couple pitchers of beer and an order of ribs to be had during the board meeting. So, but anyway, we will have a hobo there. And Jacob Hauser. We've got Alfred Harvey Wilson, who was a storekeeper here in Marion, and he will be down in our little store downstairs in the lower level. Mrs. Amos Kling will be there, and she was the mother, of course, of President Harding's wife, Florence. We'll have a World War I soldier there. He'll be out front with the Doughboy statue that we now have in the museum. This is one of the, I think they made 3 or 4 that are out in the memorial, military memorial. They took one out here a few years ago, replaced it, and we actually have one of those now in the museum. We'll have a telephone operator in our telephone museum showing you what it was like to operate a switchboard back in the days when you had to pull the plug and connect people that way. And Daniel Cooper, who was a fur trader and a fur trapper in this area, will be there showing kids furs of all types. And as I said, we're continually adding people to the list every day. So again, that's March the 23rd. from 6 to 9 at Heritage Hall, and you'll have an opportunity to visit and talk with all of those characters and many more. And I'm trying right now to see if I can get President Madison to be there as well. Okay. So he was our fourth president and was president during the War of 1812, so I think he should be a very interesting person. So that's what's coming up.
Sounds very interesting.
Let me get a little quick drink here.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello.
Not coming in very long.
Oh, I wonder what happened. You still there? Can you hear now?
I can hear him.
Yeah, we can hear you. Nothing's changed in here, but...
Well, anyway, that's what's going on at the Marion County Historical Society right now. As I told you, we are closed for the season, although there's always activity going on, and we will be planning for some other events as we go along. We'll be having the Dinner with the Presidents again this year. That's always the first Saturday in November.
Right.
I am currently formulating a list of the presidents that will be there, and that's still a work in progress. Hopefully, I'll have that done here within the next couple of weeks, because we usually start getting calls for tickets about the 1st of April, if not sooner. So I'll try to have that completed within the next couple of weeks. So just keep checking with the museum on that. I can tell you that I'm adding one new president this year that we've never had before, and
okay.
I'm pretty excited about this. I've got Herbert Hoover coming to speak this year, and he'll be one of my featured speakers this year. And as all of you will remember from your history lessons, Herbert Hoover was the unfortunate president that happened to be president during the big stock market crash of 1929. Black Friday in October of 1929. So I'm sure he'll have a pretty interesting story to tell about his experiences trying to run the country during the Great Depression. One real quick story I want to tell about Herbert Hoover, and a lot of people don't know this. Herbert Hoover was independently
trying
wealthy.
To call back again.
Okay.
We're not available now.
Hello?
Yeah, Linda?
Yes.
I was going to talk to Fred again. How about be there? Is that going to be James Anderson?
No, no, it's a different individual. Actually, he's a retired state trooper.
What was his name, the retired trooper?
He asked me too quick. John Shore?
Okay, all right. I just talked to the corporal the other day, 2 days ago, there at a basketball game. Wonderful man there. I said, how high can you go in the State Patrol Academy? He said, you know what, I'm as high as I go. Our granddaughter, she went through the Highway State Patrol Academy for the High Division Wildlife Officer. So I have not been able to talk to him, but I just wonder about these people. Who's going to be the impersonator? It's nice to know that name of who they are, because then people know that person. They'll come there and have a chance to have a talk to them and stuff.
Absolutely.
So have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, all the people that, excuse me, all the people that portray characters here are Marion people.
Right.
So once in a while I'll get a friend of mine or someone to come in and do, you know, that lives out of town. But for the most part, they're all Marion people. So I forget where I was now. So just getting back to that, the museum is closed currently, but we are planning these events. This year we are not going to do a First Ladies Luncheon. We've been doing that for the last 7 or 8 years, I believe. We're going to take a year off from that and hopefully bring that back again next year.
Okay.
But we're really concentrating on trying to make Dinner with the Presidents this year a very nice affair. So just stay tuned for some future information about that. Malabar is in full swing.
Okay.
This weekend and next weekend are the annual weekends for the Maple Syrup Festival that takes place in Malabar. And that usually runs from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, both Saturday and Sunday. And you'll have an opportunity to tour the where they make the maple syrup. We'll have a demonstration set up. First, you can see how the Indians would make maple sugar by using a hollowed out log and hot rocks, which
right.
is very interesting. And we have some Native American descendants who are there to do that. Then you'll see how the pioneers would make the maple sugar. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, when you finish that along the trail, you'll be able to see how the modern day folks do maple syrup in a condenser. And we have all the trees, not all the maple trees, because we lost some trees over the winter, but we'll have a lot of the maple trees tapped. They're on the property, and that's where we get our sap from. So it's a really interesting process. And also, the visitor center will be open. The visitor center was just completely redone in the demonstration area. The state spent over $400,000 redoing it, and there are a lot of hands-on activities in there now for kids.
Right.
So that'll be open during the weekend. And also the lower level of Lloyd Brumfield's big house, the 32-room mansion that he built in the 40s, the lower floor will be open for free tours of that day, too. So, again, that's this weekend and next weekend, and that's the annual Maple Syrup Festival at Malabar. Other than that, the trails are always open there, and you can go over there anytime. Just the park closes at dark. You have to be out there by then.
Mm-hmm.
Mohawk Historical Society is currently closed for the winter, but we will be reopening again in April. And we have three buildings now that are available, and that's all the history of the Mohawk School District that actually takes in parts of three different counties, Wyandotte, Seneca, and Crawford. So think about putting that on your list. It's only open on Saturdays, but if you check our website under Mohawk Historical Society, you'll be able to get some more information on that. So those are the three primary areas that I'm still working with. As I told your previous guest, I'm going to have a birthday this year. I'm going to be 74 this year, so I don't know how much longer I can keep this up. But I'll keep doing it as long as I can.
Well, you look good, and you move quite well. So.
Well, activity, you know,
yes,
that's the whole thing.
Moving,
you
got to
keep your body and your mind active.
Right, you got to keep moving.
And if you do those things, I think, you know, God willing, and you don't develop some sort of a disease, you can live a long life. My parents both lived to be 92 years old.
Really?
So I'm shooting for that goal.
Amen.
Anyway. Yeah.
Amen.
Well, with the limited amount of time we have today, I wanted to share with the listeners an interesting story.
Okay.
And there are a lot of stories and a lot of information out there about the sinking of the Titanic.
Yeah.
And I think actually, starting, if it hasn't already started, COSI down in Columbus is featuring an exhibit of the Titanic.
Really?
And I'm not sure whether it's going to be there all summer or not, but there's an additional fee. You pay your fee to get in COSI, and then there's a small additional fee, but you'll be able to see the exhibit of the Titanic. And I think people have always been fascinated about the sinking of the Titanic. And, of course, there were close to 2,000 people that lost their lives on the Titanic. Mm. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. But here in this country, we've had a couple of maritime disasters. We got another phone call?
Yeah, looks like it. Hello.
Yeah, Linda.
Yes.
You know what?
What?
I want to wish you good luck in the dance you're going to have out there at the Women's Club.
Thank you.
Take a hold of, because you're so busy and so well known. So good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Would Fred Malone happen to be your partner?
No, he's not.
I don't dance well.
Well, that's what they say. But, you know, just give it a try once. Don't try to get out of it. You never know. You might get awarded the number one dancer, Fred.
Who knows?
Bye. Bye. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Ed. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
When's that coming up?
Saturday.
This Saturday.
Yes.
Oh, my word. Dust off your dancing shoes.
I did that a couple
Who
months
is your
ago.
Is your husband your partner?
No, Don Yule.
Oh, Don Yule.
You know him?
Okay. I know of him. I don't know him personally, but I know of him.
He's my instructor.
Well,
so,
good.
Yeah.
Good. That's great. Well, anyway, there have been a couple of maritime disasters in this country that I think people don't know about and forget about. One of them is the Sultana, which happened during the Civil War, and I'll talk about that some other time. But the one I wanted to talk about today was the SS Eastland.
Hmm.
You ever heard of the SS Eastland?
I don't think so.
Most people haven't. The SS Eastland was a passenger ship based in Chicago, and was basically used for tours. On July the 24th of 1915, the ship rolled over onto her side while tied to the dock in the Chicago River.
Wow.
A total of 844 passengers and crew were killed in what at that time was the largest loss of life from a single shipwreck on the Great Lakes.
Wow.
Now, the ship was commissioned. I'm going to give you some information about it.
Okay.
The ship was commissioned during 1902 by the Michigan Steamship Company and built by the Jinks Shipbuilding Company out of Port Huron, Michigan. The ship was named during May of 1903, immediately before its inaugural voyage. On July 27th of her 1903 inaugural season, the ship struck the laid-up tugboat George Gardner and sank her at her dock at the Lake Street Bridge. Now, not the Eastland, but the Gardner. Minor damage was received by the Eastland. Now, on August the 14th of 1903, while on a cruise from Chicago to South Haven, Michigan, six of the ship's firemen refused to stoke the fire for the ship's boiler.
Mm-hmm.
They claimed that they had not received their potatoes for a meal. When they refused to return to the fire hole, Captain John Peru ordered the six men arrested at gunpoint. Firemen George Lippin and Benjamin Myers, who were not a part of the group of six, stoked the fires until the ship reached its harbor. Upon the ship's arrival in South Haven, the six men, and I'm not going to mention their names, were charged with mutiny and taken to jail.
Wow.
Shortly thereafter, the captain was replaced. Now, because the ship did not meet a targeted speed of 22 miles an hour during its inaugural season and had a draft that was too deep for the Black River in South Haven, Michigan, where it was being loaded, the ship returned in September of 1903 to Port Huron to make some modifications, including the addition of an air conditioning system and machinery adjustments to reduce the draft. Even though the modifications increased the ship's speed, they added additional weight and reduced her draft, thereby reducing height and inherent stability as it was originally designed. Now, can you foresee something coming here in the future? Upon her return to South Haven in May of 1904, the ship handily won a race against the city of South Haven to Chicago. In the meantime, the Eastland was experiencing periodic problems with her stability.
Right.
While loading and unloading cargo and passengers and nearly capsized on July 7th of 1904 after leaving South Haven with approximately 3,000 passengers. Subsequently, her capacity was lowered to 2,800 passengers. Cabins were removed, and lifeboats were added, and the hull was repaired. Then on August the 5th of 1906, another incident of listing occurred, which resulted in the filing of complaints against the Chicago-South Haven line, which had purchased the ship earlier that year. Now, before the 1907 season, the ship was sold to the Lakeshore Navigation Company and moved to Lake Erie. In 1909, the ship was sold again to the Eastland Navigation Company and continued running excursions between Cleveland and Cedar Point. After the 1909 season, the remaining 39 cabins were removed, and prior to 1912, the smokestack sections were removed to shorten her height. On July 1st of 1912, another incident occurred when the Eastland had a severe listing of approximately 25 degrees while loading passengers in Cleveland. Now, that's a pretty good list.
It is.
In June of 1914, the Eastland was sold again to the St. Joseph's Chicago Steamship Company and returned to Lake Michigan for a St. Joseph, Michigan to Chicago, Illinois line.
Hmm.
Now, the disaster. On July the 24th, 1915, Eastland and four other Great Lakes passenger steamers, the Theodore Roosevelt, the Petroski, the Racine, and the Rochester, were chartered to take employees from Western Electric Company's Hawthorne Works in Cicero, Illinois, to a picnic in Michigan City, Indiana. This was a major event in the lives of the workers, many of whom could not take holidays and work 7 days a week. Many of the passengers on the Eastland were Czechoslovakian immigrants from Cicero, and of the Czech passengers, 220 would perish.
Wow.
During 1915, The new federal Seamen's Act had been passed because the RMS Titanic disaster 3 years earlier. The law required retrofitting a complete set of lifeboats on the Eastland, as on many other passenger vessels. This additional weight may have made Eastland more dangerous by making it even more top-heavy. Just checking my time. Some argued that other Great Lakes ships would suffer from the same problem. Nonetheless, it was signed into law by President Woodrow Wilson.
Okay.
Eastland was already so top-heavy that it had special restrictions concerning the number of passengers that could be carried. Prior to that, during June of 1914, Eastland had again changed ownership, this time bought by the St. Joseph and Chicago Steamship Company, with Captain Henry Peterson appointed the ship's master. On the morning of July the 24th, passengers began boarding Eastland on the south bank of the Chicago River between Clark and LaSalle Streets about 6:30 in the morning. By 7:10 a.m., ship had reached its capacity of 2,572 passengers. The ship was packed, with many passengers standing on the open upper decks, and began to list slightly to the port side, away from the wharf.
Mm-hmm.
The crew attempted to stabilize the ship by admitting water to its ballast tanks, but to little avail.
Wow.
Sometime during the next 15 minutes, a number of passengers rushed to the port side. And at 7:28 a.m., Eastland lurched sharply to port and then rolled completely onto its port side, coming to rest on the river bottom, which was only 20 feet deep, or 20 feet below the surface.
Wow.
Barely half the vessel was submerged. Many other passengers had already moved below decks on this relatively cool and damp morning to warm before the departure. Consequently, hundreds of people were trapped inside by the water and the sudden rollover. Some were crushed by heavy furniture, including pianos, bookcases, and tables. Although the ship was only 20 feet from the wharf, and in spite of the quick response by the crew of a nearby vessel, which came alongside the hull to allow those stranded on the capsized vessel to leap to safety, a total of 844 passengers and four crew members died in the disasters.
Wow.
The bodies of the victims were taken to various temporary morgues established in the area for identification. By afternoon, the remaining unidentified bodies were consolidated in the armory of the 2nd Regiment on the site which was later transformed into Harpo Studios, but has since been demolished to make room for a new McDonald's corporate headquarters. In the aftermath, the Western Electric Company provided $100,000 to relief and recovery efforts of family members of the victims of the disasters. One of the people who were scheduled to be on the Eastland was a 20-year-old by the name of George Hallis, an American football player. Remember George Hallis from the early football days? Who was delayed leaving for the dock and arrived after the ship had overturned. His name happened to be listed on the list of deceased in the newspapers, but when his fraternity brothers visited his home to send their condolences, he was revealed to be unharmed. Hallis would go on to become coach and owner of the Chicago Bears and a founding member of the National Football League.
Praise God moment, wasn't it?
So that's the story of the Eastland.
Yeah, praise God moment for him.
Second only to the sinking of the Sultana, which was a riverboat that sank in the Mississippi during the Civil War, which we'll talk about at some subsequent time. Yeah.
Okay. So. You always bring good stuff, you know.
Well, I think that's an interesting story, and I once did a program to the Genealogical Society here in Marion about the Sultana, and I mentioned the Eastland, but I never covered the story, and I thought, well, maybe your listeners would enjoy knowing that story.
Of course.
You know, people don't realize some of the disasters that occurred in this country, because back in those days, all you had were newspapers.
Right.
Radio was still not a popular thing in 1915. There were radio broadcasts, but there were only a couple of large stations operating in the United States at the time.
Okay.
And so the only way people got their information was through newspapers or telegraph.
Wow.
So a lot of these things went unnoticed. So.
Well, we're out of time, okay. Fred. Thank you so much. You always do that right to the last second, right? But thank you. You're so good at what you do. Thank you for listening to A Voice of the People. And thank you for the call in. And I received that good luck message. Thank you. Till next time, be blessed. Linda Sims, A Voice of the People. Thank you.